weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Big thanks to the gang in Drive for steering us through the afternoon. It's Tuesday the 12th of November and you're listening to Game On.
We're going to build up to the Katie Taylor versus Amanda Serrano fight with Gavin Casey, who is live in Texas, and we'll also preview the National Elite Boxing Championships with Eric Donovan and Darren O'Neill.
Sarah Lavin is going to join us to reflect on her season and also talk to us about the very important area of volunteers in sport.
And Keith Tracy and Mark Langdon will talk all things football.
If you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552. We're on X at GameOn2FM or WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
Game On on 2FM.
Well, welcome to the show, Marie.
And to you, Ruby.
We missed you last night.
No, you didn't.
We did. But anyway, look, as last night, we started the show with a competition and we have it again tonight. So, the PWC Camogie All-Stars take place this Friday at Croke Park, and to celebrate excellence in Camogie and recognise the country's top players. And you can show your excellence in Camogie knowledge and beam at the chance to win yourself €400 in cash, all thanks to PWC.
For a chance to win, simply answer the following question. Who are the current All-Ireland Senior Camogie Champions? Is it A, Cork, or B, Waterford?
You can text your answer, name and email address to 51552 and we will announce the winner at the end of the show, if Marie remembers. And as always, competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for details.
The end of the show is a long time away. I can't even say that I'll remember.
That's why I just threw it out there, just in case you might win but not get announced. But we will be in touch if Marie forgets to call your name.
It'll be somewhere anyway. We have a busy show coming up, though.
We most certainly do. You had a busy day.
I had a busy day. I was in Croke Park.
You had a proud day.
I had a very proud day. I can't believe you're bringing this up. Yes, I had a very proud day because my son, who's 12, they won the Cumann na Munsingle a couple of weeks ago and he was awarded Player of the Games today.
Happy days.
So we got into
continuing the Crow tradition and Sheehan tradition in GA.
Well, it's not a Crow tradition in Gaelic football anyway. There's, I think it's fair to say, zero Gaelic football in Six Mile Bridge. If you went there now and asked, where's the football field? They would look at you like you've 10 heads. There is a hurling pitch. That is it. It is not allowed in. It's mad.
Mad is right.
They're afraid that if it comes in, that the hurling will be affected. So the priority in the village is the hurling, and that is it. And Cratlow is only 3 miles down the road. So traditionally in Clare, it's a bit of a history lesson there, Ruby. Traditionally in Clare, it's East Clare is hurling and West Clare is football. But Colm Collins, who was the Clare football manager for a long time, arrived in Cratlow and had a few sons and set up the Gaelic football club and developed it in East Clare, which is pretty much unheard of, and had this brilliant group of young kids. And at the same time, Conor McGrath's father was in charge of the hurling. So they brought this brilliant group of young kids through to senior level, which is what every club wants to do, and they won the senior football and hurling championship.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a really good story. Yeah, it is, very much so. Anyway, let's get on to what we have to get on to now, which is boxing. So, as well as building up to the Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano fight, which we'll be doing shortly, it's a really big day or a big time for boxing in Ireland, because it is that time when the National League Championships are on. So it is starting tonight, and we have two former champions that we're going to be chatting to about all things National League Champions. Eric Donovan and Darren O'Neill are going to join us. Eric Donovan is with us to start. Eric, before we get into the boxing, I do want to talk to you about Drogheda United and that great win. I know you were there. Your wife, Laura, is a big fan of Drogheda United and has been involved for quite some time. But you're getting a bit of an assist because you did the team talk, am I right?
Look, Janie Mac, I know it's a great buzz, I tell you. I'm a Drogheda United fan. Right. Laura has been heavily involved with Drogheda United girls, and she's just on a little break now because she's on maternity leave. But I was really, really honoured and privileged when Kevin rang me last week to come in and have a chat with the lads, because I know a lot of them and they'd be going to the games. I'm a season ticket holder. But when he asked me to come in on fight week, I would call it. We call it fight week. Boxers call it fight week. It was on Monday night. It was the start of their big week before the F after the lads. And it was just brilliant. And it was a touch James Taylor to just give me a mention at the end. But look, it's... I passed on a little bit of information from my past and from my experiences. And he... expected, and that's the nature of the game. You pass on what you know. But Kevin and Dara have done an incredible job with the team. They started off the season, so I wouldn't say poor. The results were poor, but the performances were very good. They just weren't, you know, there's one particular spell at the start of the league where the three back-to-back, they were winning all games, and there could have been 9 points. They ended up getting 3 points because their opposition equalised in the dying seconds, and they came away with 3 points, and they could have well been 9 points. So the performances were brilliant, but there was just something just lacking that they weren't getting over the line. But they strengthened the squad in the window, and they've really turned it around now over the last number of weeks. And look, a big game ahead now on Saturday. I'd love to see them do it. I think they will do it, but it'll be after a pretty poor start.
Look, I promise we will go to boxing in a second, but you're an individual sports person. It was you against your opponent. When you walked into the Drogheda dressing room or wherever you met them last Monday night, what did you convey from a sports person who was one person into a team sport?
Yeah, well, look, team sport is, you know, it's a team made up of individuals, you know what I mean? So they all have their own individual, you know, battles and mental kind of preparation and physical preparation, and they have to come together as a team, obviously. But like, a team, you know, is a number of individuals, and in order for them to perform as a team, they have to be able to conquer their own demons first and conquer their own performances and anxieties, etc. So I just shared a bit of my own redemption story with them. It went down a treat, and a couple of lads come up to me afterwards. And the thing is, when I speak and I talk about vulnerability, but I also talk about incredible strength, it gives people the permission to approach me. I open the door for them, and they come. You know, it allows them to come in and talk to me in a way that maybe, you know, they may have not had the opportunity with somebody else. But anyway, when that door is open, they can come in and they can share with me some of the things that they might be experiencing, some of their own vulnerability, their own, let's say, weaknesses or areas that they want to, you know, anxieties or whatever it may be. And I love that conversation. See, that conversation, to me, that's pure, that's real. And it's just, I love that. I really take great, I'm quite passionate about that area. So that's what it was like. It was just a really good chat with the lads. They're a solid bunch, and every one of them performed out of their skin. Like it wasn't, you know, you're spectacular, fancy this, fancy that. Every man just did exactly what they were supposed to do, as Roy Keane would often say, do your job. And every one of them did their job to perfection. And that's why they won, and they're just performing so well.
Honesty, honesty, honesty. You can't beat it. It is fight week of a different nature in the national arena in Dublin, the elite national elite boxing championships. For a boxer, how big a week is it?
Yeah, look, it's a big week. It's a big week, Ruby. I will say this, though. It's not the most important elite championships, because it is championships throughout the year, but it's not a pre-qualifier or anything for any world or European championships. And we know the Olympics is gone and passed now as well. So the next elite championships, which is scheduled for January, February of next year, will be an important one, because that's the qualifier for the world championships, which is later on in the year. But it's still a very important night. You know, everybody wants to win an elite title. You're the best boxer in Ireland. You're the best boxer in the country. And there's been some incredible results at the underage level over the last number of weeks. You know, at the world championships recently, the world youth championships, with 3 gold medals. And at the European under 22, month, and in the European under 22 championships back in October, we sent 18 boxers and we got 8 medals, you know, 3 gold, 1 silver, 4 bronze. So like, Irish boxing is performing, it's delivering. And but you know, I would suspect that like, there may well be a couple of new champions, I'd say, in this elite championships. But some of the big guns probably not going to see Kelly Harrington. I don't think she's, you know, Kelly has already stated that she's going to retire now, but she did also say that she wants to do, you know, have a number of Irish title fights. I'm not sure if she's going to go in yet, probably too soon after, but she, we could probably see her again in an Irish championship. Jude Gallagher is a boxer that I'm linked with, a very good, serious contender, like, you know, and he's somebody that you know, there's a lot of promoters were looking to sign him after the Olympic Games, but he's decided to stay amateur for now. And but he has to pull out. He has an issue with his back. He's a slip disc in his back, so he has to pull out. But it's going to be a lot of up and coming talent in the Illy Championships. And if anyone wants to get down there, the finals is Friday night, but it's on all week. There's going to be some top class fights and some stars for the future for sure.
Darren O'Neill is with us as well. Darren, you won a few in your time, am I right? We don't have Darren. We might have to come back to him in just a minute. Lots going on with the telephone lines today. So, Eric, what else can we look out for? You mentioned that there's going to be some up-and-coming talent. In terms of familiar names, then, people that we might have seen over the last number of years, who will be there?
Yeah, well, the three world gold medalists, I think, deserve a mention. You know, in the youth championships, Adam Malloyan from Jobstown, Kyla Doyle from Whitechurch Boxing Club, Shifra Lawless from the Four Kings Boxing Club there as well, won the European Under-22s there recently. She's a sister of Aoife O'Rourke, who, you know, we expected so much of in the Paris didn't get it on the night. It just didn't happen for her. So I'd love to see her come again because she's definitely good enough. She's a world champion, world elite champion. So she's... I would love to see her have a go. She's definitely good enough to go to her third Olympic Games. But yeah, just there's a lot of, you know, a lot of talent out there. Davy Joyce, Adam Hessian, these boys will be still in it. Jack Marley, obviously, still around. Dean Clancy. A lot of these Olympians are young. Dana Morehouse. You know, that's the thing about the Olympic team. They were very young. I know Aidan Walsh and Kelly Harrington were, you know, kind of senior members. But like I say, Grainne Walsh, still young enough to go again. You know, Dana Morehouse, Jennifer Lahan, these guys, I think we'll see them, some familiar names, household names. But look, if you get down, you're sure to be treated to a top-class exhibition of amateur boxing.
Yeah, that's always the case. Darren O'Neill is with us as well. Darren, I know you're very busy at home tonight, as well as in the past having won a few national titles. You're minding two of your own children, two babies, and talking to us on the phone.
Yeah, trying to multitask. Who said men can't multitask? Yeah, I have a 10-week-old and a 19-month-old here.
Wow.
Or 10-week-old and 19-month-old here, trying to manage at the same time. But they're little angels, to be fair, so I can't complain.
Right, so we could lose you at any moment, is what you're saying. So we better get to it very quickly. I had before we got we lost you a little bit earlier, I was saying you've won quite a few national titles, am I right?
Yeah, I have 8 national senior elites, thankfully.
That's a lot.
Love to have a few more, but we won't be too greedy. Listening on what kind of what Erica said there, you know, he's correct, and this isn't the most important national title, but at the same time, they are, as he said, they are the elite titles. You know, it is the elite championships, and everybody dreams of being the national elite champion at some stage, you know, and it may be a stepping stone for some, the likes of Kelly Harrington or Katie Taylor and these type of people who go on to do great, great things, but, you know, for some people, that may be the pinnacle for them. But, you know, everybody, regardless of their stage, that's what they dream of getting to eventually. And, you know, it is a big week. And despite being the first year after the Olympics, you know, or the first chance after the Olympics, this is a really kind of important milestone for a lot of the youth boxers coming up. You know, they're trying to find their footing in the elite championships, you know, in the open age category, and trying to find... their experience in that, you know, and try to make a name for themselves within that. So it'll be an interesting championship, without a doubt.
Now, Darren, I'd say if I was you and Eric, I'd be hoping Michaela Walsh is not listening to the pair of E, because it's an important one for her, because if she can win, it'll be a 12th National League Championship for her, and she will pass out. Kelly Harrington has won 11. Jim O'Sullivan has 10. Yeah. Kenny Egan has 10. It's fairly important for her, so I'd be dodging her now if I was a 2E.
Yeah. No, I have to say, you know, forgive me for missing her there in the lineup and in the preview lineup. But Michaela Walsh is one of our most decorated boxers, sister of Aidan Walsh. They made history as the first siblings to qualify, first brother and sister to qualify for back-to-back Olympic Games. And, you know, but she's won everything. She's won so many medals right across the board. But yeah, you're right. You know, a 12th national title, like, that is some feat. It's an incredible feat to be on top for that many, for that long. You know, it's more than a decade. Like, because it's a strong weight division that she's in as well, the featherweight, and some good boxers have come through that division over the years. But yeah, you know what? If she does it, hats off to her. She deserves it. She's an ultimate professional and a great athlete.
Yeah, she is. All right. Lads, I'm going to get you to stay with us because we're going to be going to Texas, that big fight at the weekend between Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano is looming. We're going to be crossing over to Gavin Casey there. So we'll just take a quick break, but stay with us for just a few minutes.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. We've been chatting boxing with Eric Donovan and Darren O'Neill, but now we're going to cross over to Dallas in Texas. Gavin Casey is standing by. We're going to be building up to the Katie Taylor Amanda Serrano fight. First of all, Gav, how's Texas?
It's big, Marie. Yeah, I've only been here since late last night, so I haven't had a chance to explore yet. I'm staying in Arlington, which is very near AT&T Stadium, where that fight will take place on Friday night. And I'm kind of behind enemy lines because I'm a massive New York Giants fan. Big rivals of the Dallas Cowboys, but enjoying it so far.
And what's the build-up like? I mean, I'm thinking there'll be loads of people getting behind Katie Taylor, but obviously the Mike Tyson-Jake Paul thing probably takes precedence, not in my world, but in many people's world. But is it capturing the imagination of people over there?
It is, to be fair. It does feel as though there are only two shows in town over the coming days. There's that fight on Friday night, or that sports entertainment bill, let's say, and then the Cowboys host the Houston Texans in a bit of a Texas derby in the NFL on Monday night in the same stadium, and every radio sports bulletin and I suppose a lot of the advertisements around the place are very much geared towards both of those. But like, it was interesting even in the airport, the degree to which the Paul Tyson thing, and actually more specifically the Taylor Serrano fight, were plastered all over advertisement hoardings and various things. And, you know, probably the biggest transformation I've noticed covering Katie Taylor's professional career over the last 5 or 6 years, particularly in the States, is when you hop in an Uber from an airport to get to your destination, just the increasing sense of the driver knowing that Katie Taylor is fighting in their home city, which is a pretty nice thing from an Irish perspective.
It's an 80,000-seater stadium. Are they expecting a crowd that big?
I don't think so. I'd say it'll struggle now to break 60, to be honest with you, Ruby. It's one of those where I'd imagine there is a kind of a morbid curiosity on behalf of a lot of people as to what will happen in the main event, and maybe people will click on Netflix if they're already subscribers, either in the wee hours of the morning, Irish time, or local time over here. But it's probably difficult to get foot traffic in for it, given the uncertainty around it and whether or not it's even truly a competitive fight. Plus the fact that, as you say, just with the expanses of the stadium, the nosebleed tickets that are left, you'd almost need a telescope to see the ring from up that high in the stands. So maybe about 55 to 60 is what they're expecting from what I've heard.
Darren O'Neill and Eric Donovan are still with us. Darren, just on that main event between Mike Tyson and Jake Paul, as a boxer, what are your thoughts on it?
As a boxing purist, you can't really take much either. Tyson obviously is an icon in the sport, but this Jake Paul and all these like kind of YouTubers or everyone they call them, I don't know how seriously you can take them. Like, it's a bit of an insult to boxing purists, but at the same time, look, they're, I suppose, drawing attention to it. They're bringing a bit of popularity back to it. So, you know, you have to take the good side of things as well, you know, with the negative side. Which, yeah, I suppose you'd be hoping that it would actually be a proper fight. And if it is, Tyson should blow him out there, Nolan.
Yeah, you would think so. Eric,
you'd have to think so. Eric, I wanted to jump in on this from a different angle. Obviously, with Netflix and the draw, the crowd, the money, this is Katie Taylor's big payday. So I hope she gets every penny that they're reporting she's getting. Like, if there's ever been, obviously you could say yourself or whoever, she deserves this. Whether it's on the back of Mike Tyson and Jake Paul or whatever it is, Katie Taylor deserves this.
Yeah. I know, she does. And they might actually steal the night, you know. I think I still have PTSD after the Katie Taylor Amanda Serrano first fight, because my wife, unfortunately, we were supposed to go to that, 5-8 flights, hotels, everything, and she picked up COVID in the week of the fight.
Oh, gosh.
We sat at home, we watched the fight on the telly, and she cried, God love her. And it was brilliant. What a performance. Like, I thought it was one of the best fights, never mind female, one of the best boxing fights I have seen of all time. And I just thought it was incredible. 20,000 main arena, Madison Square Garden, and the way she walked out in that night, she was just walking in a kind of a slow, steady pace, and I genuinely thought that that was going to be her last fight. And if it was, what a way, you know, it would have been to going out. But she's still producing, still performing at the highest level. And first fight was anything to go on. The second fight is definitely going to be something special. In relation to Tyson versus Paul, that doesn't really attract me at all. I'm not really interested in that fight. I think the last time Mike Tyson had a professional fight, a proper competitive, was against Kevin McBride from Ireland, from Monaghan. And Kevin McBride stopped. Mike Tyson failed to come to Devon. He failed to answer the bell at round seven and he was stopped. That was almost 20 years ago. You know, he's 58 years of age now. I just think, I know they're using bigger gloves. I know the rounds are only 2 minutes, but it's more of a kind of a, it's more of a kind of a business kind of a, what would you say, a business transaction for Mike Tyson. He wants to try and get a bit of financial benefit from this, but I'm not interested in that. I'm really just interested in Katie Taylor versus Amanda Serrano, and I think that's going to steal the show.
Yeah, I'm with you on that as well. As you know, Eric, I actually got to go to Madison Square Garden. Don't want to rub it in, but you did miss a good one. So Gav, in Texas, how do you think it's going to go? Like, when you look at maybe the last couple of years since that fight, the road that Katie's gone on, the road that Amanda Serrano has gone on, who's in a better position, do you think, to take this fight?
I don't think you could really separate them on those grounds, Marie. I would say neither of them have looked quite as good as they did that time 2 years ago. And even around then, we would have been saying that Taylor at 35 or whatever she was at that point was probably a little bit beyond her athletic best. She still had enough on the day to dig herself out of a real hole in the fifth round and produce a stirring comeback and deservedly win the fight, in my opinion. What we've seen of both of them since, Taylor's has been higher profile, obviously, in two fights against Chantel Cameron, and she adapted very well to win that rematch. Serrano's fights have been a little bit lower profile, and she's been probably going through the motions a little bit, just waiting for this opportunity. I think we're actually back to square one with it. And the difference, to my mind, this time around could be, unfortunately, from an Irish perspective, that Serrano is very much the home fighter. And I don't mean because it's in Dallas, you know, she's from Brooklyn, but more so that her promoter, manager, is in the main event. It's very much Jake Paul's show. And as we know with judges, a little bit of soft influence when you're being put up in hotels and taken for meals and looked after, you know which side your bread is buttered on. And if there is a benefit of the doubt in a very close fight, it often goes to the home fighter in this instance. And that would be my concern. If it's another coin flip, then maybe the coin lands on the other side this time around. But okay, I still think Taylor is a marginally better boxer than Amanda Serrano, so it wouldn't stun me either if she wins it more conclusively, because she tends to do that in rematches. She tends to adapt better than the opponent she faced the first time around.
Darren O'Neill, what do you reckon?
Yeah, it's a funny one. I suppose when you're looking at what's transpired since, obviously Katie's getting a bit older. I don't know where they are, but you know, there are more miles in the clock, and she's had a few tough fights, which will definitely take her toll. But you know, I think, look, I've always been a Katie fan, and I think, and I've always said, if she boxes and actually boxes, then I think it won't say an easy night for her, but, you know, it could be a comfortable win for her. You know, we did see, and we've seen in every single fight of Katie's in the pro game, she, and we've seen in the amateur as well, she loves to get involved in the ball, which is not what she wants in this circumstance, especially against a home fighter, you know, because they are going to have the crowd, they are going to have the, and, you know, as has been alluded to, their hometown decisions and all the rest of that, and who the promoter or the managers are. I mean, Chris, we've seen some shocking decisions in previous years. If you want to go back to even Golovkin, Canelo, the first fights, for example, like, that was a sure win for Golovkin, and it was given against, or given a draw, or whatever it was. You know, we've seen the same with Pace of Fury and Wilder the first time round. You know, the clear wins that are just gone, or that have been given, I suppose, incorrectly because of whoever the promoter or the manager is of the show. But look, I suppose, from a boxing pure point of view, again, Katie has all the skills. She just needs to put it into play and stick to the game plan and not get involved in a brawl. Unfortunately, that is her go-to, or what she loves to do. And look, we all love to do it at times, but, you know, I just hope that she uses her head for the vast majority of the fight. And if she does that, it could be not an easy win, but a comfortable win. But I suppose Serrano has probably had less tougher fights or less battles in the last few years. So she will be coming in, her confidence will be high, but I suppose, you know, we'll be hoping that will go against her.
Gavin, they have showed up at various promotional events, etc., etc., but what are the vibes in the Taylor camp? Are they optimistic? How is training gone? Any tells?
They've been a lot quieter, I would say, in advance of this one than they typically are. So having not yet had a chance to catch up with them in Texas, I'll probably meet them later on at the open workout. I can't really give you a vibe, but I suppose usually a quiet Taylor camp is actually a pretty good Taylor camp. You remember the Cameron rematch where she politely refused to speak to media at the press conference, and a lot of print reporters were kind of let down that week, but she was just absolutely locked in. She felt as though she didn't have anything left to say that she hadn't said in her 20-odd previous professional bouts. And if that's the case again, it could be a tough week from a work point of view, but it's probably a positive sign if she's switched on to that extent. And look, as Darren was saying there, you want her to be using her head in this fight. She absolutely used her head in that Cameron rematch. She knew what was on the line. She knew her way around Cameron the second time around. And it's just about avoiding what happened in that fifth round against Serrano the first time. And if she switched on, she has a better chance of doing that, I suppose.
And Gav, just finally, what time do we need to get up out of bed or stay up late on Friday night to watch this?
I think it's about 3 o'clock in the morning, Marie, but sure, look, most people will have Netflix on their phone, so you can watch in bed, and you know.
Great advice. Okay, well,
you can come by my children if you want to.
You'll be up anyway, you'll be doing the night feeds. Darren, Eric, Gavin, thank you so much for all of that. Looking forward to Friday night, and no doubt Gav will be chatting to you later on in the week as well, getting more insight into how things are going in Texas. We're going to take another break. Stay with us, though. We'll be talking football after these.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. We're turning our attention to football. Keith Tracy has walked into studio. We'll be joining Mark Langdon of the Racing Post as well. Keith, just let's start with the Irish football, because these internationals between Finland and England are looming, and there's quite a bit of talk about squads, who's in, who's out, with the Matt Doherty returning being a big talking point over the last 24 hours. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think it definitely is a big talking point with Matt not having made the original squad, and obviously we've had a couple of injuries in the meantime, so Matt has been called in. And when you're somebody of Matt's calibre and you've been around the Ireland scene for probably the last 10 years, you can get a little bit of an ego when you think, well, the manager's ringing me. And from what I believe, when he was left out of last month's international camp, he was told by the manager that, look, I'm just having a look at some new players, maybe the likes of Efestia, Baselli, people like that. I'm going to have a look at them. I know what you can do. You'll be back in next month's squad. As it transpired, he didn't make this month's squad, but because of the injuries, he has been called back up. So I can only imagine that Doherty's head is probably not in a good place. And I'm talking, when I say this, I'm talking from my own experiences. I wouldn't have took that very well. I'd imagine that the manager just doesn't fancy me. And like I say, when you're a young lad trying to get yourself into the Irish team, you can take this a little bit easier. But when you've been around Irish camps for as long as Matt Doherty has, and the manager knows what you can do, I think it's a little bit tough to be in and around the fringe of it.
You wouldn't have looked at it and thought, well, I have more to prove.
Sorry, say again, Ruby?
You wouldn't look at it and think, well, no, actually, I have more to prove.
Yeah, well, I think he definitely does have more to prove. When you look at his performances over the last 2 years, they haven't really been good enough. And we're not going into, like, technical mistakes from Matt. We're just going into the likes of his willingness to run backwards, his willingness to put tackles in, his desire, his passion. And that can never be the case when you play for the Republic of Ireland. We're not talented enough to have passengers on the pitch. And largely when Matt plays, he is a passenger. He goes forward. He's very, very good. But in 1v1 situations, he just hasn't been good enough. And I think with Hamer coming in now, he's thinking, look, everybody's gone from a clean slate. Nobody should be in this squad on merit. And the fact that Matt has done interviews after he was left out and said, obviously I should be in this squad, I think his thinking is a little bit bogged down at the minute. I don't care who you are, if you're not playing regular amount of minutes for your club, then you shouldn't be in consideration, especially when you're not playing well. But there will always be an exception to the rule, Ruby. I'm not sitting here saying Evan Ferguson shouldn't be in the Irish team because he's not playing. He should definitely be in the Irish team, but he's a youngster, as we say, trying to get some minutes into a very, very good Premier League team, whereas Matt is at the opposite end of the scale, struggling to get minutes for Wolves, hasn't really played well for Ireland over the last 2 years. So I would go as far to say he probably deserves this, and I hope he bounces back with a good attitude rather than saying, well, do you know what, maybe I'll just go and sit on a beach from now on in Dubai.
Because to me, like, the obvious thing is, as you get older, you have to try harder to keep the young fellas out of the team. Is that not the natural progression of life?
Yeah, it is. But when you look at what we need, Ruby, from Matt Doherty playing in a right wing back position or a right back position, he has to defend well in 1v1 situations. We've already conceded 7 goals in our 4 games. And look, I know people will be saying, but England are in our group. That's fair enough. Most of them have come against Greece. One of them has come against Finland. Only 2 have come against England so far. So defensively, we haven't been good enough. And when you speak about Matt Doherty, we generally speak about him going forward, coming in at the back post, putting some decent balls in, playing 1-2s off the right wing. But when people, and the Irish fans in particular, I know this from being in the Aviva over the last couple of years, when he doesn't run backwards, it's so noticeable. And I'm not a big believer in body language, but his body language gets him into trouble so often. And I think the manager has made up his mind with Matt Doherty, but given the injuries to Coleman, I'm not so sure how fit Festi Albiseli is himself. So I think Matt is there to plug a hole at the minute, but generally I think unless Matt buckles down and starts getting some real time for Wolves, we're not going to see him in an Ireland short for too much longer.
Okay, well, that's a bit of a harsh reality there for Matt if it does come to pass. Mark Langdon is with us as well, Mark from the Racing Post. Mark, news from the England camp that 8 England senior players pulled out of the squad. It's been met with mixed reaction, kind of different reasons for pulling out. Some have injuries, others feel that maybe they don't maybe need to join up with Thomas Tuchel. Well, because Thomas Tuchel isn't starting until January. What do you think is of the situation?
I don't think it's a great look to have so many withdrawals. The journalists this week were trying to work out whether it was a record. I think it's very difficult to, I don't think opt to keep stats on that one. So people were trying to recall a time when there were so many withdrawals. I think end of season, there'd been some maybe dodgy summer friendlies where some players maybe felt like they did want to be on the beach in Dubai rather than sort of joining up. But I think in season, this is unusual. Gareth Southgate had really built a strong sort of squad mentality where people wanted to join up. Obviously, you've got some injuries. I mean, Trent Alexander-Arnold came off in that game against Aston Villa, so obvious that he wasn't really going to join up. Some of the others... less so. I think it is a case of the players looking at it, maybe feeling like they don't want to put their bodies through these 2 games coming up. It's a hectic period we're about to enter in. Sort of, you know, December is the most crazy time of the whole year in terms of the English Premier League and all the European games and just everything that's coming along. And as you mentioned there, Marie, right at the top, Thomas Tuchel, the new manager, is not going to be in charge. Lee Carsley has lost that authority over the group, and nothing they really do in these 2 games is going to influence, I wouldn't have thought, what Thomas Tuchel's looking to do in the new year. So put all of that together, maybe apathy as well towards the Nations League, and you've ended up with nearly a double figure amount of withdrawals. I wouldn't be surprised if by that time we get to the Ireland game next week, if it was up to maybe 10.
I could see it getting up to 10, but Keith, to me, are you not kind of marking the new manager's card as to where your interest is?
Yeah, I totally understand that. Having been a player, and you look at the Nations League, and when you're as good a team as England are, they're probably looking down their nose at the Nations League a little bit. But when you look at the likes of a Cole Palmer, who's not in the European selection for Chelsea, I would imagine that he must be thinking, if I want to get to 100 caps, I'm going to have to play every game I can. If I, Declan Rice, the only one, maybe 2, obviously Trent Alexander-Arnold, as Mark said, went off on the weekend, so maybe he has a real injury. I don't mind Bukayo Saka coming out of the England team either. He's played so many games over the last couple of years that you could probably say, do you know what, you're okay. Declan Rice has already been down with cramp playing for Arsenal, so I understand there's leggy players there. But when you look across to Harry Kane, playing, and you must be thinking, if I want to get on his level, if I want to get up to that 100 cap mark, I'm going to have to play in these type of games. And I don't think it sends a great message to Lee Carsley. It's his last game in charge, but a lot of the lads have said, you know what, I'd rather save me body than go through the rigour for the two England games. And I look at Jude Bellingham, plays an awful lot of football for Real Madrid, a big player for Real Madrid, but he's managed to find himself into the squad. So I'd be trying to look at the positives rather than the negatives, but 8 is a very, very big number. But when you look at who's coming in, Ruby, the likes of Jarrod Bowen, Branthwaite, Liveramento, Morgan Rodgers from Aston Villa, the levels do come down ever so slightly, but there's some very, very good players who deserve a go on an England short also.
Yeah, and they'll be seeing it as an opportunity for sure. Mark, let's talk about David Coote, the Premier League referee. He's been suspended now after that video, which I think everybody has seen at this stage, the one where he's allegedly making those comments about Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp. How do you think this is going to play out?
I think it doesn't do any of the other referees any favours. You'd like to think that every sort of Premier League referee is honest, and when they make mistakes, it's just, you know, it's one of those sort of human error type things, and I still believe that. And it'll just be now, every time there is a mistake, people will kind of start accusing referees incorrectly in sort of from, you know, my experience of just watching the game and just sort of my general belief about kind of what goes on in the Premier League week to week. But he's made his colleagues' life just incredibly difficult. Haven't got the context of sort of how that video came about, and context is normally key in these type of things. But he's not denied it. So if what allegedly he said is true, I don't see how he can referee again at any level. It's not a great look for referees in general, and they've got a hard enough job as it is anyway, without sort of one of their own potentially making things so much worse. He refereed the game, didn't he, on Saturday. There were one or two contentious sort of decisions, but I think he generally got most of the big stuff right. So I'm not saying that, you know, Coote has cost Liverpool games or anything like that. And it's just a sad state of affairs, because I think Premier League referees have got a tough enough job on their hands already without what's going to now be coming their way from every single set of supporters every single week.
Keith, when you look at his alleged remarks, are you in any way surprised that a referee, being a human being, would have a favouritism to one side or another? They are human.
No, I'm not surprised by the human element of it. I know a lot of referees have clubs that they support and they follow. What I am surprised with is that he's let a camera get into his face, and allegedly he said these things into a camera. So that sort of stuff, you know, I know Mark is saying context is key, which it obviously is, but how you could stand there or sit there in the video and, you know, be looking down the lens of a camera and say the things you're saying when you're in the position you're in of an English Premier League referee, it's just nonsensical to me. And, you know, even within the video, you can hear things being saying that this video can't come out. So he understands the enormity of the words he's using. I understand he's a human being and he will have feelings. And you can say sort of stuff like that to your inner circle, to your family, to your friends, but you cannot say it to a camera and expect it's not going to come back to bite you on the bum. It's really just stupidity at its finest, Ruby. Really, really silly. And I can't, even if by some miracle he's allowed to referee again, the players will not forget this. I can imagine what the fans will be like, but I definitely know what the players will be like.
Yeah, well, he wouldn't want to be going on social media himself ever again, because he will be abused from every angle, that's for sure. Do you think, Mark, though, he will be able to referee games again after this?
Not in England, I wouldn't have thought.
Allegedly, if the remarks are true.
If he's found guilty or reprimanded for it, would have to be his career down the drain in terms of English football. We've seen referees work abroad, and we've seen players and managers that kind of, you know, for whatever reason it's not worked out for them, sort of domestically go and find a living elsewhere. And I'm sure that there would be other leagues that, you know, would be able to kind of overcome sort of these type of issues, but not in England being possible, I would have thought.
Keith, Ruud van Nistelrooy has disappeared out of Manchester. Ruben Amorim is in. Hardly surprising Ruud had to go, is it?
No, not surprising whatsoever. I can see this from both sides. People were making the argument, would you not keep a legend of the club around? He didn't lose any of his games while he was in charge of Manchester United. So you were thinking, is Ruben Amorim going to tap into that? But when you look at when things started to go south for Erik ten Hag, and every time the camera would pan behind him to Ruud van Nistelrooy, you would hear the Manchester United fans say, well, he's a ready-made replacement, get him in now. And you would imagine that Amorim would be looking down the road and go, if I hit a sticky patch here, the camera's going to be panning to Ruud again, and he's done okay, and he's in interim charge of Manchester United. So look, does it show a little bit of a weakness, the fact that Amorim's decided, look, out you go, I'm sticking with me all with my crew? And I know Manchester United aren't the richest club in the world right now, but £1 million I think is what they've paid to bring in Ruben Amorim's backroom staff. I don't think United would be dictated by them sort of finances, so they've obviously decided to let Ruud go at the request of the manager, which I can understand. It's probably a decision I would have made, because when you look at it in black and white, it's probably competition for Ruben more than anything.
Yeah, and I think as well, Van Nistelrooy has made no secret of the fact that at some stage he wants the job. So, like, he'd be there looming all
he
the
did,
time.
And he referenced Ruben Amorim's age a couple of times in some press conferences already. So, without undermining the manager, he's given people a stick to beat him with, which is not something you'd ever want your assistant manager to do. And the
his
fact
age
that he
for
said.
Being so young.
Well, yeah, just.
So young, these managers keep.
Well, you look at this Brighton manager, he's only a young fella and he's absolutely flying it. So, look, I think this was always going to happen on a professional basis. It's great to have a legend of the club in there, but he would have been direct competition for Ruben if ever it started to go south. So, I'm no surprise that he's gone.
Mark, where's Ruud van Nistelrooy going now?
I think he definitely won't want to be an assistant again. I think only Manchester United was, you know, the only real club that he would have been an assistant for. Once you've been the main manager, you know, there aren't many times when you take that step backward. So I suspect he'll, you know, be waiting in the wings in the Eredivisie. He'd still have a good reputation. No jobs available yet, but, likely to come up at some stage. I could also see him managing sort of bottom half Premier League. He only had a couple of games in charge, but I thought he impressed with the way that United sort of, you know, tried to attack in those games. He picked up, the morale of the players. I thought he dealt well with the media. There's four or five clubs in the Premier League that could be looking for a new manager come sort of over the next couple of months. I think he's put himself in that shop window. I see David Moyes has been doing a few media interviews. So I think he might fancy one of those jobs as well. And Jose Mourinho is even suggesting he might come and manage a team in the bottom end of the Premier League as well. So there'll be good competition. But yeah, I wouldn't be amazed if he ended up at, I don't know, Leicester or Southampton or, you know, Wolves, Crystal Palace. You know, a lot of them teams down there could be looking for a new manager in the next few months. And I think Van Nistelrooy's, you know, put himself into a decent position to get one of them, but he could never be Amorim's assistant. I just think that Amorim needed his own staff, and you know, you can't really have someone like Van Nistelrooy lurking in the background.
Well, he'd want to have a strong conversation with himself if he's heading for Southampton.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be my take on that. Mark Lang and Keith Tracy, thank you very much for your contribution this evening. We have a quick break to take and we'll be back with Sarah Lavin.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. I'm delighted to say that we are joined by double Olympic hurdler Sarah Lavin. Sarah, you've been busy. You've been lending your voice to the launch of the 2024 Volunteers in Sports Awards. I think when you think of sports, you think of volunteers, you know how important they are. But why is it so important for you to be involved with this?
Hi, Marie. It's really, really, definitely honoured to be asked to be involved with this. It's something that's really close to my heart. I think everybody, when they think volunteers, probably think like community or grassroots level or dropping their kids off to someone or picking their kids up from someone. But I think sport in Ireland at every level, even high performance, relies so, so heavily on volunteers. I know my own coach, who's coached me since I was 7 years of age, effectively only began supported 2 years ago. And at that, you know, the amount that they get is just simply not sufficient. So it's just volunteerism. You know, it's support of some description and obviously very grateful and thankful for it. But, yeah, to operate at high performance level at 20 plus hours a week of contact time plus planning and preparation, you know, I think it's something that maybe not everyone thinks about. And I think, you know, everyone watched the Olympics over the summer and it touched so many people's hearts. But without volunteers in every sport, whether it was boxing, swimming, athletics, no Olympian would be at the Olympics. So, yeah, just to show our gratitude for that and to highlight, I suppose, the significance of the role it play, that volunteers play in Ireland.
Sarah, over 450,000 people a week contribute as volunteers to sport in Ireland. I think if you put that into hours and the amount of time they give, it's an astronomical number. So, and it's the amount of time people give their own. It's hard to quantify.
It really is. And I think, you know, there's very few avenues in life that people can submit themselves and be so willing of giving their time to support other people's dreams. I don't think in society there's many things that are that selfless, and that people who are these volunteers in sport are so selfless to give up their own time in life and their own money, you know, because ultimately time is money, and you know, and you can put into so many other aspects of your life. So yeah, I think just that highlighting the appreciation that high performance athletes have for this, yeah, it just simply wouldn't be possible. Even, you know, you look at national championships, that those days wouldn't be possible in athletics. And I'm sure, again, you look at other sports, boxing, swimming, the joy that these sports bring the country. And just, I suppose, to share the story, because maybe it's not fully known how at every level. It's not just at grassroots, it's not just at, you know, community level. It's at high performance in Ireland and the significance of that.
So if people want to nominate one of their coaches, one of the people that helps out in the environment that they're in, how do they do it, Sarah?
Yeah, so the entries are open. The Irish Sports Federation are open today. So there's a lot online. There'll be on my own Instagram, on LinkedIn. There'll be links up because I think that's possibly the easiest way for people to get in touch and to submit those entries.
So, Sarah, we've been seeing a lot of athletes and people who are at the Olympics now back in the pool or are training. What's your schedule like at the moment?
Yeah, it's a bit rough at the moment. You saw me half an hour ago, you would have been like, oh my gosh. But yeah, that's just the time of the year it is. So I'm back about a month now and I'm heading off next week to South Africa for a month training camp right up to Christmas, and I'll come home for a week or two and then go back out again. So, yeah, it all starts again next year in athletics. We have three major championships, European Indoors, World Indoors, and then the World Championships are going back to Tokyo. And I think that would be really special because Tokyo, the Japanese people put in such a shift for the 2021 Olympics and didn't quite, or 2020 Olympics, but didn't quite get the crowd, obviously, they expected. So to have the World Championships going back to that Olympic stadium, I think it will be special. And yeah, I think, you know, that's where athletics goes. You know, it's another, we're back into the next Olympic cycle, and everything just keeps moving. So yeah, it's exciting.
Including you, and it looked like you and, or not, I don't know if you enjoyed it, but it looked like everyone in Limerick enjoyed your visit to the Limerick Region Athletics Hub this morning. You went down a treat, so fair play for all the time you're giving yourself. Sarah Lavin, best of luck with what's coming in the year ahead for you, and thanks for taking our call, and congratulations for the work you're doing for the volunteers in sport. A big thank you to everyone who entered our PwC Camogie All-Stars competition this evening, and a big congratulations to Luke White, who has just won €400, all thanks to PwC Cork, are of course the current All-Ireland Senior Camogie Champions. If you missed out today, there will be €400 on tomorrow's show again, Marie.
Yeah, there will, and I'll be here telling everyone about that. But before we do finish up, Ruby, I think that we should share the news that you volunteer as a Gaelic football coach with the girls.
I do, and I have daughters who play, but I tell you who people forget are treasurers, committee members, it's one thing going down to training and your kids are there and you're partaking in the coaching, but the people who go and sit on boards and make all those clubs run, they're the real people that get forgotten.
I'm going to soccer executive meeting tonight now at 8 o'clock, so it's exactly what you're talking about.
They're the hours that make it all work that people never see.
Okay, on that note, we are going to finish up. I'll be back tomorrow. Do tune in because we have that PwC prize to bring you, a brilliant one at that. Beda De Silva and the New Music Show are up next.